Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
We are very excited to kick off our two-day series talking about the race for mayor here in Bridgeport, of course. That is what everyone has their eyes on right now, and we're excited to have Senator Marilyn Moore, who is joining us right now to talk about her campaign. Senator, it's so good to have you.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, let's start off with, we were just talking about sort of your roots here. You were born here in Bridgeport.
Yes.
Talk to us, first of all, if people want to just learn a little bit more about you. You're a senator, obviously. Tell us sort of about how you got into this career and this field and everything and where you're at now.
So I was born in Bridgeport, St. Vincent's Hospital. I grew up in the Hollow section of Bridgeport on Washington Avenue, across the street from the Greens Apartments, actually. And in the mid-60s, when they Route 8 was coming through, we lost our property to eminent domain and moved to the east end of Bridgeport, and gone through, you know, different neighborhoods, lived in different neighborhoods, went to public high school, Central High School graduate, went to the old Central, and then went over to the new Central. Worked for the telephone company for 20 years. Started as a selling telephones in Trumbull Shopping Park, Mickey Mouse phones, and turned it into a career. When I left, I was a managing director, started their cellular company and their long distance company. And right after I left, I thought, after managing so many people and having so many responsibilities, maybe I just go get a job saying paper or plastic. But as God would have it, that didn't happen. I ended up working for Planned Parenthood, doing outreach for breast and cervical cancer program. And along the way, I met some people who were looking at African-American women in the Bridgeport area who were dually eligible Medicaid and Medicare, who were not utilizing their benefits for mammograms, and started working with them, and met a doctor from Little Rock, Arkansas, who was replicating a program to encourage African-American women to get mammograms. And at that time, in the 1995, you didn't hear many African-American women being diagnosed with breast cancer. So the myth was that it was a white woman's disease, black women don't get it, and women weren't going for screening. And through my journeys, I identified barriers that women were facing as they went in to get screened or they wanted to get a mammogram, and problems with the healthcare system, with the doctors, and biases. And I replicated their program called the Witness Project. So then for the next 18 years, I did education, navigation, and raised money for women who are going through breast cancer, pretty much covering all of Connecticut at one time. And we've reached over 15,000 women. But I learned how to do that by being in the telephone company and coming up from the lowest paying job to end up being a managing director, starting those companies. And when I got into the nonprofit world, even though I didn't know a lot about nonprofits, I understood what needed to be done. And I used the skills that I had learned in the telephone company to move me through the nonprofit and raising money and sustaining the organization for nearly 20 years. Along the way, prior to that, I had met Mr. Charles Tisdale, who was running for mayor, worked on his campaign in 1983. And then he lost. And everybody will say that they stole the campaign from him. So I didn't get involved in politics for quite some time. But Senator Gomes, who was elected to cover the 22nd senatorial district, went to Hartford, and I was a friend, a longtime family friend, and I decided to go along with him to be his legislative aide. And so I went to Hartford with him and did it for 2 years. And while I was there, I said, you know, I could do this job. And many people were saying that, you know, it's like you're the senator, you're getting a lot of stuff done. So I said, I'm going to run. And I came back. I ran the first time. I didn't win, but I lost by a small margin. I waited 6 years, and I saw an opportunity for me to do a better job than the person who had the seat. And I took out a six-year incumbent and won the race, and I've been there for 5 years. All of the things that I've learned on my journey is that if you can identify a weakness or something that's not being done and have a vision for how to fix it, just go do it. Don't complain or talk about other people what they should be doing. Take on the role and do it. So when I went to Hartford, it was much different than being an aide, being a senator. more responsibilities. I think in my first year I had 8 committees and chaired 2 committees. I chair Human Services and Children's for 4 years. And then this year I was appointed to chair bonding. So all the dollars that come back to the cities in the towns, I chair that as the chairperson of bonding. And I'm still the chairperson of Human Services. So I look at this as an opportunity to take everything that I've learned in the past 30, 40 years and bring it to Bridgeport as a whole city. I represent all of Trumbull, part of Monroe, and a part of Bridgeport. But I would like to represent all of Bridgeport. And I would like to take these experiences that I've had, and I've learned how to work across the aisle and with all types of people and in really tough situations. We had a really tough budget year 2 years ago. You take all those experiences and make them work for Bridgeport.
I mean, that is an incredible resume just to kind of digest all of that. And for anyone who is just tuning in, we're talking to Senator Marilyn Moore, of course, running into the primary in September, right up against incumbent Mayor Joe Ganim. But Senator, I wasn't aware with when you ran for Senate the first time that after that you took out 6 years later the 6-year incumbent. So you are no stranger to, you know, being, I don't want to say the underdog, but taking out an incumbent. So are you nervous taking on Joe Ganim in the primary?
No, I'm not. I'm quite confident. I have this belief that everything that I've done leads me to the next thing that I need to do, as long as I listen to what's going on inside me and that voice that says, keep moving forward. Everything that I've done is a challenge. When I took that first job in the telephone company, the manager told me not to spend all my money in one place. It was a Christmas job. And then for the next 17, 18 years, I would go tell him, well, I'm still here. And I mean, even in the telephone company, there are so many barriers that you have to overcome when you come from a job like selling phones in the mall to end up managing people, training, writing methods and procedures, doing policy work for the telephone company. You learn all these things, and everything has a barrier. So even when you get to the Senate, I mean, everything has a barrier because at 2 years ago, we had an 18-18 tie in the Senate. 18 Republicans, 18 Democrats. We can't get anything done if we don't learn how to negotiate and you don't find commonalities with people that you can work with them. And I think that makes me successful in many ways as being able to find common ground and figure out where we can work. So when I look at the challenge of running for mayor, I think the largest challenge is getting people to come out and vote. Mm. I'm not afraid. I don't believe that fear is a spirit that God gives us. I believe that a challenge is a challenge. It's all I've ever had is a challenge. Nobody's ever handed anything to me. I always say to people, the only thing that's been easy in my life is to gain weight. It takes no effort at all. I can just do it without doing anything. It just happens. But for everything else, it really means to me that you see something wrong or you see something that you could do better, and you just go for it.
We have Senator Marilyn Moore, who's on the line with us. Actually, she's here live in the studio, and she's talking about her run for Bridgeport mayor. We were just talking about some of her history, and anything that you've missed this morning, it will be on our podcast after the show, so be sure to check that out. Senator, I don't think it's any surprise that youth gun violence is probably one of the top problems we continue to see here in Bridgeport. I know it's on your radar. What are some of the things that you plan on addressing if you do, in fact, become mayor?
Well, just recently I met with Commissioner Rovella, who's the Commissioner of Public Safety for the state of Connecticut, and brought together people in the community who are looking at gun violence and youth gun violence. My concern is that we've had, I think, 13 shootings or 12 or 13 shootings this year, which is really outrageous. And it's mostly involved children. When I say children, I think anybody under 23 is still considered youth. And it's just been devastating for the community, both for the families that are impacted by the gun violence, but also in a public safety way. So I've brought together organizations, individuals, gatekeepers, and other people who are interested in what's going on here in Bridgeport, but that it's also happening in New Haven and Hartford. It's not unique to Bridgeport. But what is unique about this is that it's a variety of people to sit down and we've put together a task force. And early on in February, March, I was thinking about what could we do besides just talk. And many times I talk to nonprofits, they don't have the money to do the work. So I have asked Governor to provide the city of Bridgeport through a grant, $500,000 over 2 years, and it will be at RIASAP, to put some money behind getting some of this work done. Now, it's not meant to be small grants to different organizations, but it's meant to be fuel that if they need to have meetings or if they need to bring in experts, we need to have people help direct us who have experience and knowledge and evidence-based programs on how to address this violence that's going on in our cities. My concern has always been when we find a youth with a gun, and I shared that a 13-year-old, I think he was about 13-year-old, lifted his shirt up and showed me that he had a gun in his pants. And I said to myself, does that kid know how to use that gun? Where did he get that gun from? Does his parents know he has a gun? And where is he keeping that stash, right? Mm-hmm. And how does he plan to use it? Because if you have it, you're going to be forced into using it if someone knows that you have it. I want to look at the root cause of where those guns coming from. And when a child gets arrested from it, are we following up to find out where that kid got that gun from? Mm. But also the trauma that takes place in our communities and homes. I think about the children who might have left a home that didn't have anybody there in the morning to get them started, who might not have had breakfast. And then they go to school and they get in an argument. And the first thing they do, they don't use their fists anymore like we did. You know, we would just, well, meet you after school and we'll box it out. But now I'll meet you after school and I'll have a gun. Why? And what is going on in those families? So we need to get to the root causes of what's going on. And I believe there's a lot of trauma. But I also believe that people are frustrated by not having jobs. They don't have families together, or they could have a parent, one parent or two parent that's both working, and nobody's home to monitor the child. So this gun violence overflows into the schools, into safety for our streets. People will not want to come to Bridgeport if we continue to have these shootings. It's not a place where you would want to bring your children. It's not a place where you would want to come and do business. So I'm hoping that this group, and it's about 25 people involved, will sit down at the table and start to look at ideas and implement policy, some type of policy that will help us stop some of this gun violence. I don't think we're going to clear it all the way, but I think we need to get to the root cause of it. And I think this task force is what we need.
Senator Marilyn Moore, who is joining us to talk about her run for becoming mayor here in Bridgeport. We know that some of the things that Mayor Joe Ganim has focused on in his time in office have included jobs, housing, you know, taxes, certainly has looked at entertainment, things like casinos coming here, but also looking at some of the projects that he has already started here in the city to try to rev up, obviously, the economy, things like that. What do you feel separates you, not just from Mayor Joe Ganim, but also just from anybody else who's running? You know, what makes you stand out to become the next mayor?
First of all, you know, it's great to have ideas, and it's great to put on a charrette of what Bridgeport should look like. What we've not seen is really those things come to fruition here in Bridgeport. And my history has been that anything that I start, I see it until it's finished. A lot of the development you're seeing now happened prior to the mayor's term in office. What's different about me also is that I keep my promises. You know, I've said I wanted to do more for Bridgeport. I want to create better development. I want to make a better process on how you go to City Hall and apply for a permit. I want to look at zoning to make sure that people are being treated fairly. I want everybody to have the same access to City Hall, not just that you know someone or you're an insider, because we all live here. I love Bridgeport. We all should have the same opportunity to be successful here. So one of the things that I've really have been talking a lot to people about is that it won't be about that you know Marilyn Moore if you need something. It will be about that you are a resident in Bridgeport and you need to have your community taken care of. And for builders and contractors, I want to end this pay-to-play that's taking place. You know, the FBI has been here to investigate us. The optics from the outside is not really anything that we would want for Bridgeport on how it looks. I think we could have a better Bridgeport. I think I'm the person to do it. I believe in Bridgeport. I'm lived here my entire life. There's a lot of things I could be doing right now. There's a lot of places I could live, but I want to be here and I want to live here. And I want this to be a place that other generations will want to come here. At the end of the day, I would hope that in 4 years that someone could evaluate what I really accomplished in 4 years. And in 4 years, people would say, I want to live in Bridgeport. I'm proud to be in Bridgeport. I don't hear that going on right now.
Senator Marilyn Moore, we appreciate having you in studio with us this morning. I'm sure we're going to cross paths with you all throughout. And of course, the primary is coming up in September. Just a reminder as well, there is a forum coming up on the 21st, so not too far away at the Klein Memorial Auditorium, where we will see Senator Marilyn Moore, incumbent Mayor Joe Ganim, and of course, also those who are going up against in the Republican Party as well, to hear what each person has to bring to the table. And we look forward to seeing your run through. Thank you so much, Senator. We appreciate your time this
Thank
morning.
You. Appreciate you.
All right, we'll see you really soon.
It's 9:30. You know what time it is? It's time for the Coffee Break Chat on WICC.
All right, we got Luke Frey here. Luke is from the Better Business Bureau, and he joins us every couple of times a month, I should say, and he's got some great advice. He doesn't want you to get scammed. He doesn't want you to get ripped off. You know, it's funny, Luke. I was thinking about you yesterday, in fact, because, you know, we've got some workers at the house. They're doing some things, and they're banging away, and I'm there watching the baseball game, waiting for my wife to come home. The phone rings. I never pick up the landline unless I know who it is, and it came up a number. I didn't recognize it, so I just let the machine get it. And it's this woman, and I was flabbergasted. She comes on, and she says, it's imperative that I speak to you. Do you realize how far behind you are on your student loans? We need to sit and talk and set up a payment plan. Get to me as soon as you can. Like, and she was kind of aggravated.
Yeah.
And I was like, my wife came home, I played it for her. Neither one of us, we've been out of school for 40 years, for God's sake. You know, but it's like people actually fall for that kind of stuff.
They do. And I mean, if you're, you know, a person who does have loans, a lot of people take out loans to go to college. So they really prey on those topics that relate to a wide variety of people. And unfortunately, they call. It sounds personal. It's not a robot all the time. It's not, you know, always so easy to realize it is a scam. A lot of people correlate phone scams to, oh, it's some machine that's going to call me and I'm just going to hang up. Well, no, sometimes it's actual people that make it sound like a legit issue that you have to improve on, I guess.
So what they're doing is they're calling my house, taking a chance that we might have some student loans that are out there and we're going to panic.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I get calls constantly, I would say 2 to 3 times a week, about my car warranty. I lease my car. I don't have a car warranty. It's all a part of my car lease. So they're taking advantage of the fact that everybody has a car, and they're just hoping that someone will say, oh, maybe my warranty is about to expire. Like, maybe I should, you know, call them back, or maybe I should talk to them about it.
Well, Luke, we certainly saw a release from you last week, actually, and it was talking about back-to-school shopping, not to change the subject, but we do know that we're kind of narrowing in. We're right near that time where, you know, we have students who are already actually leaving back to go to college, but the high school, elementary, middle school, they all have a couple of weeks, and you know you're going to see those parents in and out of Staples and every other office store you can think of.
Yeah.
But I have to, just from when I was a kid, I can remember my mom was a real
stickler about making a list because as a kid, anything that was sparkly and seemed brand new, we should just get it. But I would think that would hike up the bill significantly. Do you have any tips on how people should successfully go and get the back to school shopping done without spending way too much or going a little too overboard?
Sure. So exactly like you said, you should always make a list so that your kids aren't grabbing all of those unicorn binders and sparkly new things for school. And it's also important to go through your home too. So like see what accumulates in the basement and the back of those closets and see what you already have in your home so that you don't go out, grab a new lunchbox and you have one, but it's in the basement, it's in the corner, I didn't realize I had it. So it's always good to, we call it shop your home, and then make a list and see what you actually need. I know a couple schools actually will send out a list telling you what your child will probably need for that school year, so that's always helpful as well, and kind of going through that and seeing what you might already have and what you do need at the store.
Lou Frey, we also know that actually just this past week we heard that the University of Bridgeport is one school that is, or a university rather, that is getting on board with trying to save money on textbooks. They just rolled out this new plan that students basically are borrowing the copies of the textbooks and they're returning them and things like that. Mm-hmm. We know how expensive it can get, but does the Better Business Bureau have any concrete numbers of how much on average people would be spending for back to school?
So in general, combined through parents who have K-12 and parents who have college-aged students going back to school, they spend a combined $80.7 billion.
Oh, boy.
That's a B, not million, billion. And it does add up. I mean, if you think about all of that back to college shopping, everything you're buying for an apartment, from shelves to new electronics, and electronics are actually about 60% of a back to college list. So the 60% of what they spend is usually on a tablet, new laptop, and those high ticket items as well.
Thanks.
We're speaking with Luke Frey. Luke, of course, is with the Better Business Bureau, and he just wants to get it out there. Some helpful hints. He doesn't want you to get ripped off. He doesn't want you to get scammed. So it's very important that we keep him in the loop here. Luke, we've run out of time, but is there a place people can go to get more information if they need it?
Yes, they can always go to bvb.org/ct.
All right, sounds good. Luke, you'll be back with us in a couple of weeks, right?
Yes, I will.
All right, thank you, my friend. Thank you for being here.
We have an Instagram page, which if nobody is following it yet, you should go do that. It's WICC600. And one of the groups that we follow on our page is Colorful Bridgeport. I'm not sure if you've seen their page, but they've got a lot of amazing work there. And when I was looking at it, Tony and I thought, oh my gosh, what amazing work that they do. And we stumbled on Groundwork Bridgeport, which apparently they do these beautiful works of art. And this morning we have Lauren Coakley Vincent, who is the president and CEO of Bridgeport Downtown Special Services District and has a hand in what has been going on with these murals. Lauren, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for giving us the time to come on and talk about our projects.
Yeah, absolutely. And first of all, we've never even heard of Groundwork Projects. At least I have it. I'm somewhat new to Bridgeport. But Tony, are you familiar with them?
I am not, which brings me to my first question. Lauren, what is Groundwork Bridgeport?
Sure. Thank you for that question. It's always helpful to have an opportunity to get the word out about great organizations in the Bridgeport area. So Groundwork Bridgeport is a nonprofit organization with its big picture goal of revitalizing the city of Bridgeport and making it more beautiful and a welcoming place to live. And it's very mission aligned with the Bridgeport Downtown Special Services District, which is the organization that I work for. And so we partner with Groundwork very regularly. So their executive director, Christina Smith, and program director, Tanner Bergdorf, were integral in the project that on Peacock Alley that I hope we get a chance to highlight a little bit. And then there was a third partner who was also critical to the project work, who we very frequently partner up with on what we call public space projects, is BPT Creates. It's an affiliate of the Bridgeport Arts and Cultural Council, And that's the creative mind behind implementation oftentimes.
Well, Lauren, I have to be honest. So I was a reporter in upstate New York years and years ago, and I actually worked out of Plattsburgh, and there was a very similar initiative that was going on there. They would do murals on different buildings to kind of revitalize the city there as well. And they said, you know, this is something we're doing in Baltimore. We're doing these in major cities. So first of all, I applaud that you guys are doing this in Bridgeport, because I really do think it makes a difference. And you did just bring up, you know, that your most recent project is Peacock Alley. We will get to that in just a second. But why murals? I mean, I think it's such a great question. It's such a simple thing that not only brings a group together and you guys bond over it, but why do you think murals kind of brings a city from good to great, would you say?
Great question. I think what's, and specifically Peacock Alley, the Broad Street Steps, a couple of other examples come up around downtown Bridgeport in particular, is that there was a creative vision that had input from a number of stakeholders, and then a lead artist kind of helped to organize the implementation, but it was really a community effort to get it all done. So the kind of the concept behind the Broad Street Steps, for example, was that it's the, when you step back a few paces and look at it, it's the DNA double helix, you know, connecting with the idea that at our core, we're all the same, but it's very brightly colored, lots of different colors in that particular mural. So while outwardly we look different, there's a great diversity in Bridgeport. At our core, we're really all the same. So the message of the piece, the process of getting it done, and all of the stakeholders involved in the implementation, I think that's what's so great about murals. And, you know, it highlights interesting nooks and crannies in the city that you might not otherwise look at or notice. So like Peacock Alley, for example, was just a gray sidewalk that connected one street to another street by the back of a building. And now it's like a vibrant play space, and you can have all manner of fun in that area.
We're taking a moment. We're talking with Lauren Coakley Vincent, the president and CEO of Downtown Bridgeport, here for the special services. We're talking Groundwork Bridgeport. Most recent work is Peacock Alley. Tell us about that.
Thanks. So that is a, I think it's a 900 feet long ground mural that is color block paint, six different colors. And the design was originally conceived by high school students in Bridgeport who were participating in Groundwork Bridgeport's programming. So they came up with the design, the color scheme, and how to get the project done. And then there was some funding that was made available to buy the paint and do all that. And so then a group, which consisted of Groundwork and Bridgeport Creates and Downtown Special Services District, got together to help put it into action. And so if you walk on Broad Street and you go all the way down, it's right behind the Reeds Art Space building. So it's that walkway from Broad Street to the back of the Arcade Mall. Or if you come through on Main Street and go out the Arcade Mall, you'll see this incredible tapestry of color all along the back way. And the nice thing about this design is it connects with the Broad Street Steps. It connects with, at least in its spirit, it connects with the Eleanor Roosevelt School. When you, if you're on 95 and you look down, you'll see this beautiful color block glass building that is an elementary school. It connects to that design concept and a few other elements of blocks and colors.
And Lauren, we know that the work is hardly done from here. I'm sure you guys have more projects on the horizons. How can people either get involved or learn more about you guys? I'm sure you guys have websites or social media where people can find out more.
We do. We are colorfulbridgeport.com. That's Downtown Special Services District. Since that name is a little clunky, we came up with a fun, a more fun name for people to find. So we're Colorful Bridgeport. There's also Groundwork Bridgeport, that's .org, and all the associated social media. And then there's BPT Creates, or Bridgeport Arts and Cultural Council. So any of those partners, check us out, website, social media, come downtown. You'll see our various office spaces in the downtown Bridgeport area. Doors always open.
All right. Well, we appreciate that, Lauren. Thank you so much for giving us your time today. And we look forward to going and checking out the most recent artwork. It sounds beautiful.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate the opportunity. Today is our farmer's market, if I can throw in a little plug there, on McLevy Green from 10:30 to 2. So come on out to the farmer's market and then take a walk around to the arcade mall, and you can see the Peacock Alley ground mural.
Hey, Lauren, thank you so much for taking a few minutes. Good luck with your endeavors, and hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Right. The summertime is one of those times where things just get away from me. You know, I can't remember which day of the week it is. I don't know what month it is. It's just, you know, the weather is so nice and you're out there enjoying it. I read this morning, we're only like 15 days away from Labor Day.
That's so weird.
It's weird and it's sickening, okay? We're 15 days away from Labor Day. Now, I don't know about you, but Labor Day, when we were kids, that signified the first day of school. Nine times out of 10, when I was a child, we went back to school the day after Labor Day.
Same here. Mm-hmm.
Okay? And, well, you know, even at 58 years old, I still get that sinking feeling, even though I haven't been to school in 40 years.
Right.
You know, it's one of those things. But there's a lot of pressure when the kids are going back to school, not just on the kids, you know, but on the parents as well. There's a lot of stress.
There's so much stress. Yeah. I know my sister is leaving for college. Actually, tonight she's getting on her flight to move back to Utah. And I look at both sides. I look at my sister, who's stressed to go back into a long distance relationship, get back into studying, get back into the grind of things. And then I have my mother, who is going right back to not having my sister home. And that's stressful for her. And now managing a kid who's on the other side of the country. And, you know, and of course, you have those stresses even with elementary school students. Everybody kind of feels that with back to school time, I think.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I mean, the kids have to get their supplies. They have to get their back to school clothes.
You got
to
make the lunches again.
Yeah. it's you know, you've got to get them out of bed, because in the summertime, I don't know how you were, in the summertime, I was up as soon as the sun came up, 5:30, 6 mm-hmm. o'clock in the morning, hitting the floor, running. As soon as the first day of school came, I couldn't get out of bed.
Yeah, isn't that the case? It's like, oh, please don't make me go. Maybe if I don't wake up, they won't come in here, right? If I don't make a sound, maybe they won't come and wake me up. That's what I always prayed.
Very, very funny. I guess every kid goes through that, but it is a stressful time. So this morning on our Facebook page, we want to know, what stresses you out? What stresses you out the most? You know, it could be losing a job or starting a new job, you know, planning a wedding. This is wedding time, of course. Who knows? Who knows? Sometimes having a child.
Mm-hmm.
Having a child can be very stressful for some people. Even though it's a happy time, it could be stressful.
There's a lot of prep. There's also a lot of unsures. I know my brother and sister-in-law are expecting their first in October, and we just saw them for dinner last night. And there's, you know, I caught my brother. He was holding my son, Chase, and he's talking to Chase in the corner, like, is my son gonna be like you? And it's like, oh my gosh, you're asking the 1 year old, like, all of your parent worries and everything. But it's true. There's just, even in the great things, you're stressed. My husband and I laugh all the time, because I would say the year that we got married was one of the most stressful years, because we had our wedding, we lost my father-in-law, and we moved, mm-hmm. which were like three of the five most stressful things. And then the year that we had Chase, we had a baby, we moved, and I think we lost somebody else. Something else happened. Oh, Derek got a new job, and mm-hmm. I got a new job.
So
I don't know why, but it seems like when we do things, man, we do things in a stressful manner. So it's easy to get stressed out, I think.
It's true. When it rains, it pours. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what stresses you out? We want to know. Go to our Facebook page. What stresses you out? Like Melissa said, it could be something that makes you happy, like a baby or buying a new house, but it can be very, very stressful. We asked that question this morning.
Yeah, we did, and we got an awful lot of responses, and some of them were kind of funny, and others were actually very serious. So we wanted to share some of those comments this morning. So starting with Carol, who said exactly what you said, Tony, moving, which, been there, Carol. I have moved four or five times just in the last 10 years, and it is stressful. She said moving moving. We are in the process of fixing the house and packing to move out of state. It is very stressful. So good luck to you, Carol. Yeah, that is very stressful stuff.
All right. Deborah, she says life in general is stressful. Mm-hmm. Somebody better keep an eye on her. Working, parenting, caring for others, driving, etc. I try to spin whatever stress into a positive and have an attitude of gratitude. All right. That's a nice way of looking at it.
It definitely is. Donna said it very simply. Housework. Yes, Donna. That's how I feel every single day. I come home and I know I have my son, and as soon as he goes home for a nap or he goes down for a nap, I think to myself, maybe I could watch a TV show, but those dishes aren't going to take care of themselves or the laundry. So I get it, Donna. Housework. Yikes.
All right. Leah, she says, being a responsible adult, you've got two teenage girls. I guess she's got to set an example. Teenage girls, they'll kill you. They really will. They'll kill you.
They are.
God bless you, Leah.
Yeah, that's a lot, Leah. I know I was one of three for my mom, and I was not the easiest. Well, Irene, this is what cracked me up. She said, cooking Thanksgiving dinner for 12 people. Although each year it gets bigger with more great-grandkids. So you are blessed, Irene. But yeah, that is a tall task. My gosh, 12 people. Holy moly, you are blessed. But that is a lot of work.
Wow. Patrick says getting laid off after 29 years, that's a tough one.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough one, and he's a little stressed out. Unable to find a job, yep. A little bit of stress going on here.
Yeah, and it sounds like Catherine agrees with you, Patrick. She's going through a very similar thing. She was just informed her job title has been eliminated, looking for a facilities management, accounting, or financial service position. So for both of you, hoping that an opportunity comes your way, that is not good news. Sorry about that.
All right. The question was, what stresses you out this morning? You gave your answers on Facebook, and we're just kind of reading them back. Joni says, I'm very stressed about global warming. And what is happening to our environment? It worries me that all the protections put in place in the past have been removed. We will be paying heavy consequences soon if we don't take care of our planet. I wasn't stressing out about that, but now I am.
Yeah, right. I know. Well, I always think about the next generation. I look at my son and I think, I hope you have as beautiful of a world as I did growing up. Well, Susan says, what's happening in the news today with all the senseless shootings? That stresses me out more than anything. Susan, amen. I have panic attacks on a weekly basis working in news, and I totally hear you. The news is very stressful. It's not fun.
Yep. Tawana says, when areas of my life are out of order.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, that happens.
Sure, it happens to all of us.
Oh, if you didn't feel stressed before, Tony, I feel like the weight of the world is on my shoulders now. I feel a little more stressed. Yeah, right?
I tell you, I got to lay down. Let's take a break.